This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 23, for May 28th, 2008, the Virtual Earth Edition. Hello, everyone. This is Larry Clarkin, one of your co-hosts for The Thirsty Developer. Once again, I'm not joined by Dave Boss, my co-host. Again, you know, Dave and I have had a little bit of an issue getting together to record the what we call the banter for The Thirsty Developer. That's our intro and our outro to each one of the great interviews that we bring you each week. Dave has been very busy putting these great events together called CodeFest. I forgot to mention in the last episode that if you're in Wisconsin, Illinois, or Indiana, Dave is taking the CodeFest on tour through those states. If you visit his blog at daveboss.com, you'll have the show dates and when they're going to come to a city near you if you're in our local area here. If you're not in that area, of course, tap your local developer or architect evangelist for Microsoft and ask them how you can get CodeFest to come to your local area. And before we get into today's interview, which is all about Virtual Earth, I got to give you one last piece of Minutes Trivia. It is about our Zoom contest. During the last episode, I told you that the Zoom contest was still open, and it is. I forgot to give you the end date. I've set an arbitrary end date of June 2nd, 2008, which is the Monday after this podcast gets released. All you have to do to enter is send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com with the subject line of Zoom contest. And then in the body of the email, tell us something that Microsoft could do better. This is, again, the end of our fiscal year 2008, and we're looking for feedback about how we can actually be better, both as evangelists and as a company as a whole. We're going to collect the feedback together, put a nice report, pass it around internal to Microsoft. And also, if there's some specific issues, we'll contact the product team that's associated with it or the group that's responsible for it, and we'll let them know what Microsoft can do better. And now on to today's interview. I actually, a few weeks ago, sat down with a good friend of mine. I've known Chris Peachman for about 2 years. I met him, you know, when we were active, you know, when we were both part of the community here in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area. His expertise, I mean, he knows a lot of things about, you know, .NET, particularly ASP.NET, but his real expertise area that he focuses on is Microsoft's Virtual Earth platform, which is a platform for mapping data that developers can tap into. I had a chance recently, a few weeks ago, when we were at the Heroes Happen Here launch event in Milwaukee, to sit down with Chris and to ask him, you know, to give everybody an introduction to the Virtual Earth platform. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and roll the tape on that interview. Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm at the Heroes Happen Here launch event in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we've run into our old friend, Chris Peachman. Chris, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Chris Peachman. I am an independent software consultant. I am also a Virtual Earth MVP.
So, Chris, we're here today to talk to you about Virtual Earth, which is the Microsoft mapping platform that's available for web applications. So let's start, you know, with a little bit of history. When did you get involved with Virtual Earth?
I started messing around with Virtual Earth when it was version 1.0 beta. I think it was a couple years ago.
So about 2005 time frame, as I recall, you know?
I think it was about that, yeah.
Yeah. And what were you using, you know, the Virtual Earth platform for?
My employer at the time specialized in real estate websites for individual real estate brokers. So custom real estate websites, essentially. And
so not for like, you know, a big real estate company, but like me as an independent agent, like Larry Clark in real estate, you know, you guys would build the web application, you know, the website for me.
Well, that company specialized more in building the websites for the actual real estate brokerage firms.
Okay.
Not
okay.
The individual agents.
All right. So they had lots of listings and things like that available, lots of features, as opposed to just kind of a brochureware site that, you know, like I would have. Okay.
Yeah, it was a full list, fully searchable website. Any criteria the client wanted to allow their customers to search by was implemented. There's a lot of customization involved with the websites.
So full catalog system. I want a ranch, three-bedroom ranch, at least two baths in Brookfield, Wisconsin with a three-car garage. Go, right?
Yeah, that type of stuff. And traditionally, with real estate websites, you just get a list back for your results. Another coworker and I kind of came up with the idea of putting the listings on a map and using the map as the context for your search. So I actually built some prototypes using, started using Google Maps, and then my employer wanted to look into Virtual Earth, so I moved over to Virtual Earth and kind of prototyped it there. And then, I mean, everybody within the company was kind of blown away with the idea of being able to use a map to contextually search for listings, especially the power of being able to find listings that are near the city you're searching in.
Right, especially if you know the area, right? Like, you know, you may not know the exact location of the house, but you're like, ooh, that's awfully close to this street, and that's a heavily traveled street. I have kids. You know, that's the kind of contextual information that you can pick up on the map that you're not going to get just from the flat address, right?
Yeah. Well, especially like if you select the city, like you say the Milwaukee area, you might be willing to look at houses in some of the surrounding suburbs, which wouldn't necessarily show in the list. You'd have to maybe do another search. Whereas with the map, they'll show up there.
That's cool. And I think now, you know, into the 2008 timeframe, pretty much every real estate site that you go to has got the, you know, contextual map search type information, right? It's almost jacks or better at this point. You have to have that. But, you know, 3 years ago, this was probably, you know, pretty new, right?
Yeah, when I started prototyping it, I think there was maybe one or two sites that I had seen that did stuff with mapping and properties, but it wasn't mainstream at all. When we launched the product, it was actually a product that added on top of the real estate website platform that my employer sold at the time. And when we launched it, there was really no real estate websites using mapping yet.
Well, that's pretty cool. So can we talk a minute about the Virtual Earth platform and how it works? And I think that the points on a map is kind of the canonical example right now. Actually, I show in, you know, when I'm demoing to user groups or whatever, when I'm talking about, you know, JavaScript or, you know, web type functionality, I almost always use Virtual Earth as an example because it's really cool. And I think a lot of people are, you know, it's kind of eye-opening how quickly you can do it. But, you know, so the way Virtual Earth works is, you know, I've actually got my own web page. It's running on my own domain. I've got a little JavaScript there, but then I also point to this, you know, big JavaScript library out on dev.live.com, right?
Yes. Microsoft hosts the Virtual Earth JavaScript API code file, and then you just make references to it in your page to include it and use it. One of the benefits you get from Microsoft hosting the JavaScript file is they do post updates here and there, adding certain small features or fixing things, and you get the benefit of those automatically since they're hosting the file.
And also it's, you know, even, you know, it's a compressed library, you know, they've got a lot of the, you know, the white spaces and the comments taken out of it. It's still a good sized library. So also with Microsoft hosting it, you know, you don't have to pay to push that file down, right?
Yes, that is correct. I'm not sure how big it is, but yeah, there is a slight bandwidth savings.
Okay. So I reference this piece of JavaScript, and I also need to have a div tag on the page, right? And that's basically, you know, telling the Virtual Earth APIs where the map goes, right?
Yeah, you just define a div tag, and then using CSS, you set the size of the div, you know, basically the size of the map you want. And then it's like three lines of JavaScript code to actually make the map appear within that div.
Okay. And then let's talk about putting the actual points on the map. And let's kind of stick with the real estate example because we've been kind of talking about that. Let's say I have a list of four houses that I want to show. You know, what do I need in order to place those pinpoints on the map?
Just to put points on the map, you just need the latitude longitude coordinates. So with real estate, obviously each listing has an address. You need to geocode those addresses somehow. Geocoding is the term for converting an address into a latitude-longitude coordinate on the globe. There are a number of service providers that offer geocoding services that you can subscribe to, and then also there is some geocoding support in Virtual Earth too.
Okay. So, and this kind of goes back to the, I remember, you know, it was in fourth grade, Mrs. Flynn was my fourth grade teacher that taught us longitude and latitude. And like with many things in school, I was like, when am I ever going to use this, you know, in real life? And and it's kind of come back on me, you know, because when I mess around with Virtual Earth, the mistake I always make, Chris, is I get the long and lat backwards. So, you know, I'll think a point is going to appear in Indianapolis, Indiana, and And when I get it backwards, it actually appears off the coast of Africa. there's a sea down there that is the exact inverse of Indianapolis. So that's my mistake.
I thought the same thing in school, and I had to look it up when I started working with Virtual Earth again.
So in addition to at that point, there's a method in the JavaScript API that I can put the point there, but I can also do a lot of other cool stuff. And I think everybody who works with mapping, software, sees that I can hover over it and it'll do a nice pop up, and that pop up is, pretty rich, right?
Yeah, when adding push pins to the map, you can define a title and description that'll show within that bubble that'll pop up when you hover over the pin.
So at this point, I've used, some JavaScript, but there's got to be some server-side capability for this, right? And that's kind of, where your software business comes in, right?
Yes, I've built an ASP.NET AJAX server control that encapsulates the Virtual Earth functionality so that you don't have to write any JavaScript code if you don't want to.
So if I have my my four houses on my server side that I've queried from a database or something like that, I've done the long and lat, I can actually pass those to a control that you've got, and it can do all the JavaScript heavy lifting for me.
Yes, my company's name is Simplovation, and the name of the product is web.maps.ve. And you put it on the page just like any other server control, and then from within your C# or VB code, you just create shape objects, set the latitude, longitude, title, description. There's some other properties to customize the push pins there too, and then you add them to the shapes collection of the map object, and then they just appear on the client side when the page loads.
Okay, and thus far we've been talking about points, but you mentioned shapes. And I've never done this myself, but I know that there's other shapes that are possible with Virtual Earth. Can you talk about some of those?
Yes, you can. Well, a shape is, there's three different types of shapes. There's push pins, which we're generally familiar with plotting on a map. There's polylines, which is basically just drawing a line on the map with one or more segments to it. And then also polygons, which is an enclosed shape, and you can have it, you can shade in the color of it.
So that might be useful if I want to identify, what a zip code is, right? If I actually had the coordinates for that, I could, I could actually represent that on the map as an overlay.
Yes, you could plot a polygon that would overlay on the map to show the outlining area, shade it in if you want, of the zip code. Or if there's any other kind of a geofence, any other area you want to outline on the map and show graphically where it is specifically, you can do that also.
So you actually used a term that Mrs. Flynn didn't teach me in fourth grade, a geofence?
A geofence is just basically a defined outline of an area.
Okay, so that's a term for the you hip guys that understand all this.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's all right. We all have our own little language, but I wanted to make sure that people who are listening kind of had a good definition of that. There's a couple different ways we can go with this, but one of the things I want to kind of address, and I've actually had this conversation with a number of people, and that's generally why we want to put something on Thirsty Developers. If we have the conversation once, it's okay. If we have it twice, maybe, when we hear from a lot of people confusion that you got to explain something three or four times, we always feel it's easier just to let's put it in the podcast, let's get an expert like Chris to come on and talk about it. And that is, there's a lot of confusion between maps.live.com, Virtual Earth, and then there's also something, it's kind of legacy, but MapPoint. Can you talk about the kind of those three different layers?
Well, MapPoint pretty much came before Virtual Earth and Live Maps did. It's basically the platform that Virtual Earth and Live Maps are both built on top of.
Okay.
And then the maps.live.com or Live Maps is the commercial product that Microsoft has for consumers to use mapping. And then Virtual Earth is the service that you can subscribe to as a developer to utilize mapping within your own applications.
So maps.lib.com is an implementation of a mapping software built by Microsoft, you know, and integrated in with the live search and the blog search and all that stuff, built on the Virtual Earth platform. So when I use the Virtual Earth APIs, I'm essentially doing the same thing that Microsoft's done, but instead of, they've got a very generic, you know, kind of implementation that does a lot of different things, mine would be specific to what I wanted to do on my website, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay. The maps.lib.com site is it's a very good example of a implementation using Virtual Earth that has a lot of features built in.
Yeah, because you can do, like, you know, I think they've even got it where you can search for, you know, show me all the movie theaters in my area, and it'll actually show you, in addition to the location of the movie theaters, what's actually playing there. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, but they have a lot of data behind it.
So one of the things when you go to maps.lib.com, one of the things you can do is you can actually say, give me traffic data. And it's kind of, you know, put as, and I used the term earlier, like an overlay. Is that a correct term? You know, because it kind of, you know, puts the information
yes.
on the map for you.
Yeah, it's an overlay.
And are they doing that with, you know, with the shape objects that you were talking about earlier? Or, you know, I mean, is it something that if I had custom data like that, I could overlay on my map?
Yes, there's the way that the shapes are plotted, they are essentially overlaid over the top of the map. There's also a neat feature in Virtual Earth that allows you to overlay your own map images over the map, and you can set a level of transparency of those images too, so you can see the underlying Virtual Earth map through your images.
And can you give us an example of that? Like maybe something you've done, or maybe some website that people could go check out, you know?
Well, some examples that I've seen, I can't remember any URLs off the top of my head, but like plotting transit system maps or like hiking trails.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Any kind of a map that's drawn to scale can be plotted pretty easily on top of Virtual Earth.
And do you have any insights on how that's actually implemented, or, you know?
There's a free tool from Microsoft called Map Cruncher that allows you to take the images into Map Cruncher and then give it a bunch of reference points and where to match up your map images with the Virtual Earth images. And then it generates all the map image files that you then point Virtual Earth to pull in.
So Chris, it never amazes me, you know, Dave and I talk about this podcast as, you know, being the conversations that we have as Microsoft that work for Evangelist, it never amazes me that at least once a week somebody tells me about a Microsoft product that I've never heard of. And this week's is Map Cruncher. I didn't, you know, there's a couple other Microsoft folks in the room. And have you heard of Map Cruncher? Okay, so John's heard of it, but, you know. So that's cool. So, but I probably got to have, you know, some information about the map, you know, make sure the coordinates map up, whatever. But I could actually make, you know, Larry's favorite walking trail, you know, through my neighborhood in Brookfield, and could actually map that out and then overlay that, you know, onto a map.
Yes, well, to like map your own, like your favorite trail or whatever, then the best option to do that might be just plotting a polyline on the map to represent that. Unless you have like images that you got that have more contextual information on the images about that area or the trail.
Okay.
That you want to show in addition.
So probably just to do the trail, I can do that with, you know, the shape objects that we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
So how do people actually get started? What's kind of some of the best resources that you can point people to, you know, they're hearing about, you know, the geotype information that's available. How would you tell somebody, like, okay, here's the three things you need to do to kind of get started with it?
Well, to get started with Virtual Earth, you can go to the dev.lib.com/virtualearth website, and there's a bunch of team blogs, links to team blogs there, and then there's also an interactive SDK that actually has sample code that you can play with, and then there's a source tab you can click, and it shows you the JavaScript source behind that example.
Yeah, I've been to that site, and that is absolutely the kind of the coolest documentation that I've seen, you know, probably ever, you know, on how to use an API, because it's very interactive. I see the sample, I can see the code, they've got the references, you know, they've got the four tabs laid out. You know, that's really cool.
Yes, it's a it makes it very easy to learn and get going on how to use Virtual Earth. And it also, when you're looking at an example of how to do something, there, you know, like you said, in the tabs that are there, there's also a tab that'll show you the MSDN documentation for that functionality also, all okay. right within that context.
Okay, so that's you know, so that's the API. Kind of, you know, what are some other resources? Is there a book on Virtual Earth?
Actually, there aren't any that I know of. There's a lot of people implementing mapping, but I don't actually think Virtual Earth is still popular enough that the book companies want to spend the money in publishing a book.
Okay. So a lot of the information is like, you know, mainly in the form of blogs then? I mean, other than the documentation we've already talked about?
Yeah, most of it's online in blogs. There's the Virtual Earth team blog. The Virtual Earth 3D team has a blog, too, that they started recently. That's a team that works on the 3D functionality in Virtual Earth. And then there's also the via virtualearth.com website, which has been around since version 1 was out, and there's a lot of good articles on there. Some of the articles date back to previous versions, but there's a lot of good information there. And then there's also my blog, where I've posted a lot about Virtual Earth development.
Cool. And what's your blog address? We'll also put it in the show notes, as everybody knows.
It's peachsoft.com. It's spelled peachsoft.com. Just if you can't figure out the spelling or remember it, just reference the page for the podcast.
Yeah. And also, I have to make a plug. You know, one of our, I think he's a product manager, Mark Brown, and there are, I think, three or four different Mark Browns at Microsoft, but he actually runs a pretty good Virtual Earth blog. And then you pointed me to somebody, to Garzella.net last week, and that was a pretty cool site, because he's put a lot of examples. He's done it as a blog, but it's really, each blog entry is a good example of how to do something in Virtual Earth, right?
Yes, and they're actually, I can't remember the exact URL, I guess. I'll give it to you to put in the show notes, but he actually has, I think it's something around 20 different examples on how to do stuff with Virtual Earth, and they're not the traditional how to plot a push pin. He's got examples on how to enable drag and drop of push pins, and he's got some cool examples of being able to drag and drop shapes and polygons, or polylines and polygons, to be able to resize them.
Yeah, I messed around with a really cool one that he had, that if, let's say, you've got, you know, 40 or 50 push pins on the map, and the user could actually select an area, and it would just give you a list of the push pins that were in the area that they selected. You know, so there's some pretty they're complex examples. I think in general, though, you know, one of the things that, you know, barring using the control that you've got, you know, that'll do all the server-side stuff for you, I think one of the things that you have to embrace is that at some point you're probably going to have to do some JavaScript, you know, as you get into the deeper functions with Virtual Earth. And, you know, shouldn't be afraid of JavaScript. JavaScript's kind of cool, actually, right?
Yeah, JavaScript is actually a very dynamic language. I don't know if dynamic is a correct term.
That's an overloaded term, so.
But it's a very good language. It's very easy to extend functionality and even override functionality with JavaScript. Even though the Virtual Earth JavaScript control is very easy to use, you still have to do your own parsing of XML using JavaScript code, and any asynchronous calls to the server using AJAX. So that stuff can be a little tricky to write, and that's actually the reason why I've created my web maps VE control. And previous to the commercial version of my control, I actually have an open source version that is still available on CodePlex. It's at codeplex.com/peachsoft. VE3.
Yeah, and we'll open a link in there. So you're probably not maintaining that project, or it's probably just, you know, out there?
I'm not maintaining the project anymore. I stopped maintaining it once I came out with my commercial product, but it's still a very good example of a server control written for Virtual Earth, and you can still use it. It is currently written for Virtual Earth 4, which is actually being deprecated in fall.
Okay.
So come fall, if you're using the open source control, you'll want to either switch to using the newer commercial product that I sell, or modify the code of the open source project to update it.
Yeah, you'll have to make some updates. Real quick, you know, just want to let everybody know, and I don't know if this is a question for you or more of a statement. One of the cool things with Visual Studio 2008 is, you know, the enhanced support for JavaScript. You know, we've all talked about the debugging and the breakpoints and all that, but the IntelliSense features and the ability to add IntelliSense on a JavaScript library, I think, is really phenomenal. And do you know much about the project to document the Virtual Earth library?
Yes, it's the Virtual Earth JavaScript IntelliSense helper. It's hosted at CodePlex. It's at codeplex.com/VEJS. It's a project that was started by Mark Schweigert, who I believe he's a developer evangelist at Microsoft. And I'm actually a contributor on that project also.
Cool. And tell us a little about what it does. You know, and this is 100%... you know, for the Visual Studio IDE, right? It's not something that actually, you know, runs, it doesn't enhance VE itself. It makes it easier for the developer, right?
Yes, it's only used at development time. It's the JavaScript objects, the VE map and VE shape and all the JavaScript objects in the Virtual Earth API with all the method stubs in place, but there's no actual code behind the method stubs. There's just the JavaScript IntelliSense style XML comments in place, so that when you include that JavaScript file within your page, when you're developing JavaScript using, or developing Virtual Earth using JavaScript from within Visual Studio, you get the rich IntelliSense support that you expect from being a Visual Studio developer and you're used to with .NET languages.
Yeah, what I noticed is when I was doing VE stuff. And I'm not as, you know, sophisticated as you, Chris. I'm definitely a 4 or 5 points on a map kind of developer, right? But I used to spend a lot of time alt tabbing between Visual Studio and the dev.lib.com SDK documentation on Virtual Earth. I'd be like, okay, now what method am I looking for? Now that I got the IntelliSense in there, I'm familiar enough to kind of get me close enough to the right method that I'm looking for. Like, I know VE maps has a set zoom and center, you know, which is one function to put, you know, to center the map and to set a different zoom level. I used to have to, you know, I know the method, I had to go look at to see what the parameters were to get them correct. Now they just pop up in IntelliSense and it's really cool. And all, you know, it's not just the method signatures, but it's also, you know, a good English description of, you know, like the zoom level. It starts at 0, goes to 9. And I think it really makes, JavaScript development in general, but the Virtual Earth stuff a lot more approachable because it's so familiar to you.
Yes. One other thing that you benefit from the JavaScript IntelliSense helper is in the method signatures, when you're typing it out, it shows you the data type that each of the parameters for the method expects. Since it's JavaScript, there's still no compile time checking of data types, but at least you get it in the IntelliSense, so it makes it very easy to go through without having to look at the documentation as often.
Yeah, so you know that the zoom level is an integer. And it actually gives you a little bit of, you know, help on, you know, not just an integer, because you can't throw, you know, 32,758 in there anymore, right? It gives you a balance, say this is a 0 through 9, which is really cool.
Yes.
Any other parting thoughts on Virtual Earth? Any other thing you'd like to share with the listeners?
I know Microsoft's putting a lot of money into it. They keep updating all the imagery, and every 6 months, I think it is, they come out with a new release of Virtual Earth. This last April, they came out version 6.1. Last fall was version 6.0. I mean, they keep adding more things to it. It keeps getting better. And the community documentation, the blogs and the forums and everything keep growing as more and more developers start using it. So even though it's very easy to use, it's getting easier.
Yeah. And I think it's a neat platform, and you talked about the visual imagery. I mean, it's so stunning, you know, some of the photos they have. you know, in the major cities. They haven't got to a lot of the outlying cities, but you know, the graphic rendering that they've got and the bird's eye view stuff, and we could probably do a whole other show on that, but you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess one other feature that I want to mention is the 3D functionality in Virtual Earth. It's a feature that's not really touched on quite a bit yet, but it is definitely growing. They're adding support for 3D models of buildings with images of like the side of the building on it and stuff, you know, in Virtual Earth. So when you switch to the 3D view, you can turn the camera angle down and scroll the map like you're walking between the buildings in the cities. It's really cool. And then also with plotting shapes in 3D, you can set the altitude also. So if you are plotting something that's airborne, it'll actually show up in the air and not on the ground level.
Yeah, that's cool. I've actually, you know, when I show people the demo, you know, using the Virtual Earth libraries with the IntelliSense and, you know, the JavaScript debugging and all, I admit that I always start off by hooking up the Xbox controller, you know, to the 3D Virtual Earth and actually flying through the city. You know, it makes for a really neat demo, and I think it's a lot of fun personally. I wish they would enable the fire button, you know, on the Xbox controller. I think that would be kind of a neat add-on, but I guess it might be a little too like that game Rampage, you know, when you were Godzilla and you were destroying the buildings. Boy, I'm really digressing on this one. So
yeah, but I haven't actually hooked up a Xbox controller to zoom around the city yet, but
yeah, it's a lot of fun because, you know, if you set, you know, a good center point on downtown and then zoom way out, so you're looking at, you know, like the view of the United States, then you can actually, I think it's the right trigger, zooms you right in, so you actually can fly into the city. You know, I feel a little like Superman, like Superman when I do it. So, but with that, maybe we ought to wrap up. Chris, thanks for being on the show. Love to have you back in the future.
Oh, glad to be here. Thanks.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that interview, that introduction to the Virtual Earth platform with Chris Peachman. Chris is a great guy. I always enjoy talking to him, and I was glad to catch up and talk about this great piece of functionality that you as a developer can tap into quite easily and add a lot of mapping functionality to your websites. I really enjoy talking about Virtual Earth. I've been showing a lot of samples of it lately as I've been going around and talking to various user groups. It's my demo of JavaScript-type functionality because, you know, as we mentioned in the interview, unless you're using a control like Chris's server-side control, that you're going to need to do a little JavaScript to get moving on Virtual Earth. And that brings us to the next segment of the show, which is the blog you should know. I've got two blogs about Virtual Earth, continuing our theme. I think we're going to call this the Virtual Earth episode. The first is the Virtual Earth 3D team. There's a specific team of folks that just do the 3D functionality on the Virtual Earth platform, and they blog at ve3d.spaces.live.com. The other blog that you should know is for a program manager for the Virtual Earth platform. Mark Brown is his name, and he blogs at blogs.msdn.com/markbrown. And he's got some really interesting topics. It looks like he's, you know, pretty much blogging every other day. He's kind of new to his role, so I think we want to, you know, send him a few subscribers. But he's got some great posts on the technology behind Virtual Earth and some cool events coming up. And with that, I think we'll go ahead and wrap up today's show. As always, you can find the Thirsty Developer podcast on the Zune Marketplace, the iTunes Music Store. If you go to thirstydeveloper.com, you can actually get the RSS feed to subscribe directly from there if you're going to use a tool like RSS Bandit to, you know, listen to your podcast. I invite you to comment on each and every show at thirstydeveloper.com. If you want to send us general comments about the show or enter our Zoom contest, you can send us an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. My name is Larry Clarkin. You can reach my blog at larryclarkin.com. My co-host is Dave Bost. You can reach him at daveboss.com. And you can find us both on Twitter and Facebook and also LinkedIn. I'll go ahead and put our LinkedIn profiles up on the show notes also in case you're not on Twitter or Facebook and you still want to connect with us. And with that, I'll wish you guys a good week, and we'll see you soon. Thirsty Developer podcast on the Zune Marketplace.